Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
This is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast, and we have a great guest for you today. This is the B segment. I think this is 945B of the podcast, and the guest is Catherine Harmon Courage. I like the last name, Courage. She's a contributing editor for Scientific American, a journalist whose work has appeared in the New York Times, Wired, National Geo, and Popular Science, and has been covering, so to speak, the microbiome beat since 2009. Catherine, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
The book that she has written is called Cultured, How Ancient Food Can Feed Our Microbiome. And although a lot of our audience has been exposed to the microbiome since probably 2006 or so, when I think Dr. Oz and I patented the use of the microbiome for improving mental health, so I have a conflict in talking to you, Catherine. Let's think of them as totally naive. That is, our audience is totally naive. And why do we need a microbiome, and why do we have one? And could we live without one? That is, what happens with mice who don't have one, for example?
Yeah, those are all great questions. So, yeah, when I first started covering this, as you mentioned, about a decade ago at Scientific American, I just was really surprised to learn about these early studies that were coming out. Scientists just had started getting access to genetic sequencing technologies that were fast enough and cheap enough where they could actually see what microbes were living in our bodies, bacteria, archaea, fungi, all kinds of little things that we can't see with the naked eye. And a lot of them can't be grown in the lab. They can't be cultured very well. So we didn't really know that they were there until we started getting this kind of quick genetic sequencing going. So yeah, back then, 10, 15 years ago, we were really just starting to learn that we did have all these microbes that live in our bodies. And then since then, the research has advanced, and we have learned that they're just connected to so many of our important, what we think of as human bodily functions and systems. They're connected to our immune system. We really depend on them, especially from, the time we're born, to kind of help tune our immune system properly so it's not overactive. They're connected to our nervous system, so we're learning about connections, as you mentioned, to the from the microbiome to mood disorders and mental health. So it's really this really intricate, complex system that we are finally just realizing exists. And now, we kind of have to figure out exactly what these connections are and how they do translate to our human health.
So can we live without, the microbiome is all of those parts of the bacteria, fungi, et cetera, the living world that lives on us, in us, and around us, attached to us in some way that isn't us, that isn't our human genome cells. And what happens if we eradicate it? In other words, in mice, you probably can you can breed them without a microbiome, I assume. One, can you? And two, do they live as long? Are they as fit? Do they seem as happy, if you can figure out how to judge mouse happiness?
So they do breed these mice without microbiome, or they're called germ-free mice. And so these mice are raised in really strict conditions that have no access to any microbes whatsoever. So not only are they lacking a gut microbiome, but they just have no microbe contact at all. Interestingly, they do survive and they live okay. They eat less food really to grow to a normal weight, which is interesting. But they would never survive out in the real world, out of their highly controlled environment. So if we were to somehow eradicate all of the microbes from our bodies, we would not do well out in this microbe-filled world. So our native gut microbes really help protect us from other environmental and harmful microbes. They kind of, you know, at the very least, take up that room, that ecological niche in our gut to keep the nastier bugs out. But as we've already talked about, they do a lot more than that as well.
Well, you seem to imply that a couple things I take it from the microbiome. One is they consume some of our food, so we don't gain as much weight. And secondly, that somehow exposure to them from our immune system or neurologic system early in life helps protect us from diseases later in life. Are those correct assumptions?
Yeah, for your first point, one of the really important functions that we're learning about is, yes, they're kind of how they translate our diet to our health. And their favorite food is fiber. A lot of fiber that our bodies can't break down ourselves kind of goes along and makes its way to where most of our microbes live in our large intestines. And from that fiber, a lot of our resident microbes make really beneficial compounds for our bodies. So I think that often, that link kind of gets left out oftentimes in conversations about the microbiome. People are focused on probiotics and fermented foods, which are all great and do, you know, have been shown to have benefits on health. But I think we often do forget to talk about nourishing our native gut microbes that are already there and feeding them a high fiber diet so that they can flourish and also make these beneficial, you know, often anti-inflammatory compounds for us. And then, yes, in terms of communicating with our immune system, it's really, you know, we're still in the early days of a lot of this research, but just finding out how important it is. You know, we evolved as a species along with all other animals to live in pretty dirty, you know, microbially rich environments. And these days, our lifestyles certainly don't reflect that long history of evolution. So one of the theories out there is we're kind of missing these microbes and this exposure, also too, to some parasites. It's known as the old friends hypothesis, that we evolved with these friends, that, you know, in our guts that we don't have anymore. And so our immune systems and bodies expect to see them there. So not finding them, they kind of often might turn on themselves, create inflammation and autoimmune disorders. So that's kind of one of the big theories floating out there right now.
So let's go into that. And before I do, I should remind our audience, we're talking with Catherine Harmon Courage, C-O-U-R-A-G-E. The book is Culture that she wrote, How Ancient Foods Can Feed Our Microbiome. You may remember her as she actually wrote the book Octopus, the Most Mysterious Creature in the Sea. So you take on some weird topics, Catherine. And one of which you were talking about a theory on how the bacteria that we are born with or that we get as we pass through our mother's womb is important in preventing disease later in life. And this protection seems to last through life. But yet, so one of the points I think you make in the book is that when you eat a certain food, such as kimchi, which has it's a fermented food, but has active bacteria in it, that bacteria doesn't stay with us very long if we don't keep eating kimchi. So it isn't like it colonizes or develops its own city inside our intestine, if you will.
Right, exactly. And that was an interesting discovery that I made while researching this book. I originally was just interested even in, you know, something as simple as yogurt, and was under the impression that exactly that you would eat yogurt and somehow the probiotics in the yogurt would recolonize your gut, you know, kind of restore you to this ancient ancestral gut health, kind of indefinitely, or at least for the long term. But while I was reporting the book, a study did come out and showed, you know, volunteers in a study were taking a probiotic, and then when they stopped taking the probiotic, they couldn't really find any traces of that bacterium, you know, a number of weeks after they stopped. So it was pretty much cleared from the system, as you said. So it really is this issue of having to keep consuming these foods. You know, you don't just get to have your one bite of kimchi every year and feel like you're good to go. So that was one of the interesting parts in reporting my book too, was getting to travel to all these different countries and see how so many cultures around the world do integrate these fermented foods in their daily diet without kind of thinking of them as like a special health tonic food. It was just part of the way people ate every day. And I think especially in the U.S., we're kind of missing that. You know, it's coming back a lot in a lot more artisanal products. And as people get aware more of the microbiome and its impact on health, but it's, I think we do have a long way to go in kind of changing our thinking about how we're approaching these foods.
Now, one of the things, it's a very curious system, if you will. So we have a lot of stomach acid and enzymes in our small intestine that are there at least partially to kill bacteria and other things so that we have a sterile small intestine, or at least so that we don't get a lot of diseases that are bad, I assume, from food we eat. And I assume that came from the era, we evolved that from the era before we had cooking to kill the bacteria. So talk to me a little bit about that and how we handle, if you will, yogurt has X amount of live bacteria in it. By the time it gets to our large intestine, it has much less, does it not?
It depends on what microbes you're looking at. And yeah, that's exactly right. You know, our part of our GI tract system goals is to kill microbes that come in because most of them we might not really want in our guts, in our system. But that's the kind of the special thing about probiotic bacteria and bacteria that are in yogurt, for example, is that they are able to survive that really harsh trip of all the acid and the heat and all the churning and enzymes that are designed to kill most other microbes. So by definition, a probiotic bacteria has to be able to survive that trip and make it to the large intestine to thrive and to give us beneficial effects. So that's definitely, you know, that's one of the reasons I think, too, we see most probiotic foods out there, yogurt, kimchi, pickles, other pickled vegetables and fruit are on that acidic spectrum. So the bacteria and yeast and fungi that are involved in making them are used to that environment. That's, you know, where they thrive, just like they'll do okay, at least passing through our intestinal tract.
And, but now when you take a probiotic, I assume some of the probiotic foods, not the foods, but the pills designed to survive that acid environment, or how do they combat, and how do those bacteria interact with the bacteria we already have? So we have a lot of different species, I assume. How many different species on average does a human have? Would you, I guess, I don't mean to, what's the guess?
Yeah, we each have hundreds. But the interesting thing about that is that we each host kind of our own microbial fingerprint, if you will. So, you know, my hundreds of bacteria species will be different from your 100 bacteria species. So that's a really other kind of level of, I think, precision medicine in the future is taking into account not just a person's kind of macro health and their own like human genes, but also the own individual microbial profile that that person has.
And one of the things that you talk about in the book is that that diversity goes away as we get older. And I'm wondering how do we restore that diversity, or talk to us about these ancient foods. Do the ancient foods that you talk about have a role in increasing diversity of our microbiome, or intent on where it isn't?
Yeah, so I think, as we were talking about before, too, the fact that people in most other countries and cultures do eat these fermented foods just as a matter of course each day, that does help introduce these additional microbes. So even if these microbes aren't taking up residence in our bodies, at least they're in our system. So while they're there, they have beneficial effects and, you know, can kind of communicate with our immune system or our nervous system and produce beneficial compounds. So it's, you know, maybe we don't really actually have to worry if these foods aren't actually colonizing our guts as long as we're continuously eating them and introducing these microbes. And then the flip side of that too is in so many of these cultures, it's not just about eating a lot of different fermented foods, but also eating a diet that is really rich in those fibers, kind of more rustic grains, and a lot of kind of heartier whole or vegetables and foods that haven't been processed as much as a lot of foods that we eat in the States. So that also helps to kind of nourish and maintain that group of native gut microbes too that we depend on.
And another part of this book, and the book is called Cultured, How Ancient Foods Can Feed Our Microbiome. A large part of it is you're traveling to the different areas, such as Korea and looking at kimchi and Japan and looking at miso. Let's pick a country to talk about. In Korea, how often do people eat one of these, if you will, ancient foods?
Yeah, I would say pretty much at every meal. Speaking with people there, I was surprised to learn that it was really just a part of the dietary culture to expect to have kimchi on the table at pretty much every meal. And in fact, a lot of people said, you know, it didn't really feel like a balanced meal if there wasn't, you know, that element of that sour, spicy kimchi flavor to contrast with other flavors in the mix. So that was really interesting to me. I went there to research specifically kimchi, but going to some of the huge food markets in Seoul, I was just blown away by the number of other fermented foods there that are part of the everyday cuisine that I wasn't as familiar with. The fermented soybean blocks, fermented sauces, fermented fish. It's just really a way of eating and a way of thinking about food is a lot different and, you know, kind of this living, more interesting component of the diet than I think a lot of us think of it as.
And now when you went to Japan, I suppose miso is part of their everyday diet as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Miso is really wrapped up into so many different applications. You know, we encounter miso soup here frequently, but other than that, it's just added to so many sauces and marinades and glazes. And it's just really kind of this foundational element to so much of the cooking there.
Now, when we eat, let's just say I shouldn't use this, but let's just say an avocado. Do we get bacteria there? In other words, it seems to me that's a very ancient food too from Latin America. Is that most of that is probably bacterial free, or is there a native way of putting bacteria inside that?
Yeah, so just like we have a microbiome, plants have their own microbiome. A lot of those, you know, those bacteria and fungi and everything are kind of tuned to that environment rather than our gut so much. But it is, you know, talking with a lot of researchers, I'm always very curious to hear how they eat, especially after researching the microbiome and if it's changed their diet and their approach to food. So a lot of them do kind of stress, you know, they try to grow their own vegetables or get them at farmer's market. And, you know, if there's a little bit of dirt left on something, don't freak out. You know, it's okay. It's not a bad thing generally to have a few soil microbes in our diet. You know, our bodies evolved to expect to ingest a lot of these things. So our, you know, super bleached produce is not the way our bodies really evolved to expect food. So so it's interesting. It's kind of this idea of just eating a little bit more rustically, a little bit dirtier, if you will, which, you know, I try to incorporate in my own diet as I can.
So that's an interesting point. So since you've researched this, how have you changed your own eating? And I should say, we are talking with Catherine Harmon Courage, Courage, author of Cultured, How Ancient Foods Can Feed Our Microbiome. And obviously, she's probably partakes of these foods now often. Is that right?
Yeah, so I try to integrate them in my diet as it makes sense. And, you know, if I can, a little bit in each meal. And talking with some of these other researchers and fermenters, you know, it's not about sitting down to a bowl of kimchi for lunch. You know, a lot of these foods have been, you know, they've been created as condiments. So it's just about having a little bit here and there. I try to, you know, put kefir on my oatmeal in the morning and little things like that. And really just focusing, too, on getting as much fiber as I can in a variety of sources, you know, whether that is steel-cut oats or adding beans to a salad or something like that, just to keep the native gut microbes happy and healthy as well.
And so a typical, now you've also done, I should add, and one of the curiosities, since you cover field microbiome for Scientific American, the Microbiome Project just had three articles this past week in, I guess, Nature Medicine on the early reports relating to, I guess, diabetes and anxiety and bowel disease. Tell us what you expect to find over the next 5 or 10 years relating to the microbiome, would you?
Yeah, so I think we, although there's been so many amazing papers that have come out in the past 10 years and more, I think we're still really at the very beginning of this field, which is really exciting, just to find all of these correlations between, as you mentioned, diabetes and inflammatory bowel diseases and neurological diseases. So I think these correlations, at least I'm hoping over the coming years, will turn into more directional understanding, you know, so we can really pinpoint more precisely, you know, this combination of microbes may be influencing this dynamic, which is helping to, you know, create this medical condition, or maybe it's a medical condition that's caused by something else that's impacting the gut microbiome. So I'm hoping that we will get closer to understanding those relationships, which will then hopefully lead to more targeted treatments and prevention even of these conditions.
And so do you expect to see that? I mean, in other words, just take us, guess 10 years in the future. It's 2029. And will the typical American be taking ancient foods with these bacteria? Will there be probiotic treatments? Will we use many more fecal transplants? What will we be doing relating to the microbiome? Or do you not expect any change?
I do expect some change. I mean, optimistically, it would be great if we have a better understanding and we're able to prescribe specific microbes to help treat diseases or prevent them maybe in people who might be predisposed to them. That's my hope. I don't know for sure if we'll get there. You know, it's always interesting to look back and, you know, there was so much excitement around the Human Genome Project, and that's definitely paid off in a lot of research and medical advances. But I think the pan out from that hasn't been as great as we expected at the time. You know, I'm hoping that the microbiome project is a little bit more fruitful when it comes to impacting our health on a shorter time scale. But there just is so much going on in this field, and so many startup companies too are getting into this and trying to, you know, create clinical trials and work with the FDA to create proven treatments that use what we're learning about the microbiome. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of scientific power and, you know, getting to be commercial power behind it too. So, you know, I'm hopeful that that will mean progress in a lot of these areas.
I want to thank you. This is, we've been talking to Catherine Harmon Courage, Courage. The book is Cultured, How Ancient Foods Can Feed Your Microbiomes. We've just touched the very surface of the book, which has these fascinating stories about the different cultures as well as about the microbiome. And as you can tell, she's incredibly literate in a fun way, meaning the book reads quickly and it is with clarity and, if you will, a easy translation of medicine or of medical or biology into understandable prose. So thank you, Catherine Harmon Courage. The book is Cultured, How Ancient Foods Can Feed Our Microbiome. I look forward to following you on Scientific America in this area so we can keep up to date. You've been listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast. This is the B segment, the guest segment, 945B. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another wonderful guest. I actually will tell you that this is about cleaning your home and how to make it clean with healthy products, a room-by-room guide next week on the B segment, the A's, of course, the news of the week. Thanks again.